A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Law Center about the continued efforts at the local level to impose gun controls despite Minnesota's preemption law. St. Paul, Minnesota, already subject to a lawsuit after it adopted an ordinance banning so-called assault weapons, large-capacity magazines, binary triggers, establishing some new gun-free zones. Even though the ordinance says, listen, this won't be enforced until the state legislature allows us to start enforcing these local gun laws, Rob Dorr says that doesn't matter. The way the preemption law in Minnesota is written, it doesn't, you know, you can put in whatever language you want. As soon as a locality crafts a gun control ordinance, they're breaking state law. And I got to tell you, you know, his argument did not sway St. Paul city council members, but it may have had an impact in Edina, Minnesota. It may have had an impact in some of these other communities that were part of this 17-city coalition that were supposed to be passing these gun control ordinances with the goal of putting pressure on the state legislature to adopt a statewide ban on so-called assault weapons and large-capacity magazines. So with that as a background, let's get right to our conversation with Rob Dorr. Take a look and a listen. Rob, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you there in snowy Minnesota.
Yeah, we got just a pre-Thanksgiving surprise.
I love it. 72 degrees here today in Virginia, so very un-Thanksgiving.
Rub it in. Rub it in, Cam.
All right, so let's get right to it. We've got this coalition of cities across Minnesota who have been yammering about passing their own local gun control ordinances. St. Paul has actually done so, and you all have sued St. Paul over this local gun ordinance, which bans so-called assault weapons, large-capacity magazines, binary triggers, sets up a couple of gun-free zones. Is that right?
Ghost guns, yep.
Ghost guns, okay. Yeah, ghost guns. And you know, you and I have talked before about this. St. Paul says, look, the ordinance is okay because even though Minnesota has preemption law, we've written this in such a way that it's not going to take effect until we're allowed to enforce this ordinance. Explain again why that theory doesn't hold any legal water.
So you know, there's two main issues with that. One is they keep saying until the state repeals preemption, but there's another provision in there. There's actually three ways that it comes into an effect under the ordinance as it's written. One is after 30 days, it says it's in effect. Then it says it isn't in effect until the state repeals preemption, or the state passes a law that is substantially the same as one of the ordinances that's on the books there, but doesn't provide any mechanism of determining who gets to make that decision and what notice is given to the public. So there's incredible vagueness as far as like when this ordinance will actually come into effect. And that's unfortunately causing our members who live and work in St. Paul to alter their conduct, because on any day, you know, tomorrow, a week or a month in advance, somebody could decide that this law is now in effect. And then, you know, the property that they have would be banned. So we have members who are thinking about living elsewhere, who are, you know, moving out of the city entirely to prevent prosecution. People who are looking for or, you know, other work options, or just avoiding the city in its entirety. The bigger legal issue is they just don't have the authority to do this in the first place because of Minnesota state preemption law. One of their arguments is that this is just like states that passed abortion restrictions in anticipation of Roe versus Wade being overturned. But the big difference is those states had the authority within their own legislative process to pass those bills. Courts were just enjoined from enforcing it. Here, cities only have the legislative authority, the ability to enact ordinances that the state gives them. And the state specifically said, you do not have the authority to even pass this ordinance, even with its zombie enactment provision.
Yeah, there's nothing in the preemption statute that says you can do this so long as you don't enforce these ordinances, right?
Yeah, the statute says that the state preempts all authority of the cities to enact any ordinances, and any ordinance that is enacted is void. So by its very nature, the ordinance is void, which includes any, you know, zombie provisions that bring it back from the dead, you know, that they want to argue.
Okay. So this coalition was like 17 cities. Is that right? Something correct. Like that. Okay. So St. Paul's passed the ordinance. Edina, is it Edina or Edina, Minnesota?
Edina. Edina. Easy way to remember it is every day I need attention is the common acronym in the cities.
Which I can remember because you actually put that in your letter to the Edina officials there.
That was funny. Yeah, I wrote a letter, and if you look carefully, the first character in every sentence, well, every line, not every sentence, spells out every day I need attention.
Okay, so they were, I don't know, were they slated to vote on a measure? I watched the city council meeting, I watched portions of it. I saw where the city manager and the city attorney talked about the ordinance in question, and they said, you know, we can give this to you, city council, but we can't endorse it because of the preemption statute that's in place. I saw the mayor complaining about one of his constituents who had said, why are you guys doing this? I guess he called it a leftist attack on our right to keep our arms. And the mayor, wow, you know, public safety is everybody's concern. Huffing and puffing, but ultimately he said, we're going to have a public hearing before they hold a vote. Is that Edina backing down?
So it is in a way. I mean, they have to have a public hearing on any ordinance anyway.
Okay.
What made this one different is they introduced it. Then they spent an hour talking about how to avoid getting sued by us, or if they do get sued, positioning themselves in the best way to succeed. And then instead of actually officially introducing the ordinance, an ordinance has three stops. One is first reading. Second is the second reading, which involves a public hearing. And then the third is the passage. So they punted on even the introduction of the ordinance because they wanted to have this public meeting beforehand, which is, you know, in context with the large conversation about us suing them, is they're probably waiting to see how our lawsuit with St. Paul shakes out before they take any official action.
Okay. And what about the other 15 cities in this coalition? Are any of them advancing an ordinance at the moment?
You know, that's what's been kind of interesting. After our lawsuit, several of the cities have gone on record saying that, you know, they're going to pass a resolution, which, you know, just is a wish list from the city. Mm-hmm. Some have specifically said, the city of Bloomington said, no, we're not taking any action on this. So, you know, I think while everybody enjoyed getting the media spotlight by standing up in front for a press conference, I think once they probably talked to their city attorneys and then saw us suing St. Paul 7 minutes after they passed their ordinance, they might not want to engage in this on that front.
That is good to hear.
Which was the intended effect. Yeah, I mean, we may not prevail on this lawsuit simply because the city's going to argue that we don't have standing, that nobody's been actually harmed by this. We're arguing that our people are harmed because they're already forcing to alter their conduct right now due to the vagueness of the ordinance. But, you know, that's going to be the threshold. They certainly can't succeed on the merits. If we get to the merits, they're going to fail. So it is possible that the city can prevail, but it's not going to be the court saying your ordinance is okay. It's just going to be on a procedural matter. And I think that fight is what the cities are holding back from. And us filing that lawsuit at least stemmed the tide of all of these 17 cities piling on, you know, and really, you know, trying to stretch our resources too thin.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I mean, again, getting back to the standing argument, as you say, this ordinance may not be in effect today. The city council in St. Paul may not have any intent of enforcing this ordinance today. But there are a number of ways that this ordinance could take effect. We don't know when. And so, absolutely. I mean, if you are a gunner, if you own an AR-15, if you own a large capacity magazine, you've basically been put on notice by the city that you're going to be a criminal. We can charge you for these items that you lawfully possess today at some point in the future. Why wouldn't you take action in response to that threat, even if it's not being enforced at the moment?
Well, exactly. And because of the vagueness of the statute, it could just be some officer who's fresh out of the academy sees somebody carrying an AR-15 in public, which is perfectly legal, opens up the ordinance book, says, oh, hey, that's illegal. And then, you know, it forces a confrontation with one of our members or supporters. And or some bureaucrat decides that they're looking through statutes that have been passed by the state and says, hey, you know what? That's close enough. You know, I'm going to kick off enforcement of our ordinance. And now, merely because of that bureaucrat or that officer's decision, our members' property is now considered illegal and their conduct is considered illegal. So our members are tangibly harmed right now because they're forced to gameplay that out and alter their conduct to prevent that very scenario from happening, which is expressly endorsed by the ordinance.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, and again, as you say, one of those measures, one of those doors that can be opened to enforce this law locally, is if the state legislature passes something that's substantially similar. So before I let you go, I got to ask, you know, the special session that Tim Walz could have called at any moment appears not to be taking place. So it looks like, you know, February is the start of the 2026 session. How concerned are you right now? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of pressure being put, not just on Republicans, but rural Democrat lawmakers to get on board with a gun ban, get on board with a magazine ban. How concerned are you? And what can Minnesota gun owners be doing right now to try to keep their Second Amendment rights as intact as they are at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, the margins are razor thin. You know, kind of the secret that Tim Walz won't tell you and why he keeps blaming Republicans to try to divert attention from this is that they don't even have the votes for this within their own Democrat caucus in the Senate. But there, I'm sure there is a lot of pressure being put on them to try to back off on their previous commitments. They might be trying to water down bill language enough. The House is going to be tied. There's two openings right now, but those seats are reliably Democrat. So, you know, the House is going to be at a 67-67 tie. There's several suburban Republicans that they are putting a ton of pressure on to try to back gun control measures. So it is a razor thin margin. And if you care about Minnesota, a lot of times Minnesota is seen as the leader for other states because we have such a Democrat gun owning tradition in the state. That they look, well, hey, if it can happen in Minnesota, then we can pass it in other places like Virginia and you know, Wisconsin and other states. So if you care about that, stopping it in your states, definitely get involved with the Gun Owners Caucus at gunowners.mn. Sign up for our email alerts and see how you can help get the word out.
Okay. Is the state Senate up for election next year?
Yes. Ah. All 201 seats of the legislature will be up.
Okay. Well, that hopefully is going to be good news for gun owners because it means that those rural Democrat senators will not be just getting pressure from Tim Walz, but will also hopefully be getting pressure from their gun owning constituents to stand firm in support of our Second Amendment rights. So, all right, yeah. Rob, listen, I appreciate you joining us. I hope you get to start your Thanksgiving holiday here soon. Very thankful for you and the work that the caucus and the Law Center are doing up there in Minnesota and really around the country, because the Law Center and the caucus involved in amicus briefs and in lawsuits that are challenging gun control laws outside of Minnesota. So as I said in your introduction, you guys are really just punching above your weight, and thank you for doing what you're doing.
It's a tedious work of love. So I appreciate everybody. Appreciate you, Cam, for helping get the word out.
Absolutely. Rob Doerr joins from the Minnesota Gun Owners Law Center here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks to Rob for joining us on the program. And, you know, again, I'm a huge fan of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. Minnesota Gun Owners Law Center is a new offshoot of that program, but I really do believe that they are punching well above their weight. So I'm always happy to have those folks on talking about their efforts to defend our right to keep and bear arms, not only in Minnesota, but really across the country, because they're now participating in amicus briefs and 2A cases all over the place. All right. On to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there. Now, this is not a true recidivist report. In fact, this guy did not have a previous criminal history, which may explain why he was sentenced to probation for shooting inside a Las Vegas high-rise. You might remember this because this story made nationwide headlines in 2023. A guy named Andrew Warrender fired a rifle inside the Turnberry Towers, and an employee later shot and critically injured him, stopping the shooting. So this is the guy that just got probation for that crime. Warrender initially faced charges including attempted murder, and back in October, he pleaded guilty to a charge of discharging a firearm from or within a structure or vehicle. So prosecutors, again, downgraded that charge substantially. He still faced between 1 to 10 years in prison, but he had asked a judge for probation, citing mental health challenges. According to, I believe this is a KLAS in Las Vegas, in documents filed before sentencing, Warnick's attorney noted that he had filed several psychiatric evaluations under seal, and that in 2023, the arrest was Warnick's first. During sentencing on Monday, Clark County District Court Judge Daniel Piper sentenced Warnick to probation for a term of 5 years. Should Warnick violate his probation, he will go to prison for 2 to 5 years. I got to say, I understand this individual's mental health concerns. At the same time, though, it sounds like this guy was found competent to stand trial, right? Which means that there was a psychiatric evaluation. And psychiatrists said, yes, this individual can assist in his defense. Was not so mentally unstable at the time that this act was committed that he could try to plead not guilty by reason of insanity. I'm a big believer in a robust mental health system. I'm a big believer in destigmatizing mental health. But I'm not a fan of using mental health as an excuse to get away with criminal behavior. And if this individual was in fact competent to stand trial and was in fact deemed competent during this crime, then I have an issue with a pure probationary sentence here. To me, again, if that's the issue, this guy is a danger to himself or others because of his mental illness. Maybe prison isn't the place for him, but maybe he should be confined to a psychiatric facility until the point that the doctors deem him no longer a danger to himself or others. But that's not going to happen either. He's going to check in with his, hopefully he's going to check in with his probation officer maybe once a month. But that's it. That's the only oversight that the state is going to have over this individual. And again, just based on the severity of the offense, I don't think that's enough. On to today's Armed Citizen story. Now, this is another unusual case. This out of Macon, Georgia, where a murder suspect argued self-defense in a gas station shooting, why a judge agrees, and why this individual is still going to prison. Obviously for a lot longer than the last guy we talked about, because he's not going to prison at all. But he's going to prison for a long time. Keenan Devontae Andrews had his murder charge dismissed because he was able to prove that he shot and killed a guy named Jerry Burke in self-defense at a Circle K gas station back on August 30th of 2023. Court documents show that the two were in a fight when the shooting happened. He testified at an immunity hearing. He was facing charges of malice murder, felony murder, aggravated assault, possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. He was granted immunity to all those charges by Judge David Mincy, who said that, yes, in fact, Andrews was acting to protect himself. During his testimony, he said that the day of the shooting, he had parked his car at the Circle K, went inside, and he saw that guy, Jerry Burke, recognized him as somebody that he'd had an altercation with, he said, 4 or 5 years ago. And so he left. He was going back to his car. And then Burke approached him after Andrews had returned to his car. According to video surveillance, he actually opened the driver's side door of Andrews' car, repeatedly hit him. Burke then exited the vehicle and turned before Andrews also got out of the car. In this video, you can see Burke kind of crouching down at the rear of Andrews' car for a second. That's after he had been shot, and then he runs away across the parking lot. The judge noted that there were multiple shell casings found on the ground where the incident took place. One of them found in the driver's side of the vehicle. The other remaining cases were in the passenger side. So, again, all of those shell casings inside the vehicle. The judge said in his ruling, Mr. Burke was killed by a single bullet that entered his back on the left side under his arm and lodged in the middle of his chest with a slightly upward trajectory. Based on the trajectory of the bullet, it would necessarily have been fired by the defendant either before the defendant exited the vehicle or as he was doing so. Meanwhile, he said that the shell casings in the passenger side of the car appeared not to be directed at Burke as he ran away, but instead appeared to be the results of shots fired that the defendant fired towards the front left side of the gas station. So some of Burke's associates were apparently there at the Circle K as well, and they allegedly fired at Andrews. And Andrews was firing back at them, which were the additional shell casings. No evidence that Burke had a gun. But again, those other individuals appear to have been armed and appear to have shot at Andrews, prompting him to return fire, according to court documents. Judge Mincy said the defendant had no duty to retreat before defending himself from Mr. Burke's unprovoked assault on him in his own vehicle. And granted him immunity to prosecution for murder, aggravated assault, possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. He was not, however, declared immune on two counts of possessing a firearm as a first offender probationer. Back in 2016, Andrews was convicted in a robbery case, and he was sentenced to 10 years probation. He was not allowed to possess a firearm while he was on probation. And because he did so, even acting in self-defense, he was adjudicated guilty of violating probation. He was resentenced to 20 years in prison. And the illegal firearm possession charges do remain pending. So again, acted in self-defense, did so with a gun he was not allowed to possess, and even with time off for good behavior, Keene and Andrews are going to be spending a significant amount of time in prison. On to today's good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A nurse in Louisiana who helped come to the aid of a crash victim while wearing her wedding dress because she had just gotten married. Happened a couple of days ago. Heather Schubert said as they were leaving the church, heading off to their new life together, she and her husband saw a man laying across the road. She said his car, all the airbags were deployed. They were on Interstate 10 Saturday night. She said, you know, when you're a nurse, you always put other people first. That's always my first instinct. So they stopped the car. She ran over. She said, I assisted in the manner of seeing what his pupils were like, if he had any trauma responses, which he, in fact, did have trauma. She said his pupils were not reactive to light. She said, you know, there's never a question or a hesitation. She says, I'll probably always be the person to run into the accident and see if I can help. And she was able to help this individual. She said not the way she expected her wedding day to end, but she said she wouldn't change a thing. She said, I would hope that anybody, whether they're a nurse or not, anybody, if they see someone in trouble, would run and do the same thing. I mean, we like to think that, but clearly that's not the case, right? There are a lot of folks out there who will ignore. It's somebody else's problem. Somebody else can help. I'm not equipped. I don't know what to do. I don't have the time. I'll let somebody else take care of it. But in this case, nope. Delaying the start of their new life again to save the life of another, Heather Schubert and her husband. We thank you for your very good deeds there in New Orleans, Louisiana. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. By the way, you know, I always talk about, if you want to become a VIP, VIP Gold, VIP Platinum subscriber, go to BaronArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off of your membership. Well, we've got a Black Friday sale going on, starting a little bit early. Runs through Monday evening. 60% off the VIP, VIP Gold, and VIP Platinum memberships. But if you subscribe to a VIP Platinum membership, you will have a chance to win a lifetime VIP Platinum membership, which is really cool. You get all kinds of great features, not just the ad-free experience, but you get access to Town Hall TV, you get to take part in our weekly live chats, Hot Airs and Morrissey and I do one every Wednesday, but you've got Stephen Cruiser, Stephen Green, Vodka Pundit. They do a live chat. There are a lot of other Town Hall media writers who will do this on a weekly basis or a regular basis, giving you the chance to interact with them and, you know, talk about some of the big stories of the day and week. It's one of my favorite parts of my work week, and I'm looking forward to doing it later today with Ed Morrissey. Would love for you to be a part of that. Again, use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum memberships. And if you sign up again to become a VIP Platinum member between now and Monday evening, you will have a chance to win a lifetime VIP Platinum membership. Just a scheduling note as well. You know, I always say be sure to visit BearingArms.com throughout the day until we talk again, because we're keeping up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information. That will be the case over the Thanksgiving holiday. Our posting schedule will probably be a little lighter than normal. I am hoping to spend some time with the family, in addition to having to spend a lot of time in the kitchen tomorrow, my very first time cooking Thanksgiving dinner. Well, like I said, I'll tell you how that goes on Monday. We'll have an after action report, but we will also be keeping Bearing Arms up and running with fresh content on Thanksgiving and the holiday weekend as well. So do be sure to check out the website. There's a lot of stuff going on. We're going to take a deep dive into some of the 21 amicus briefs that have been filed in Wolford versus Lopez. Plus we'll have armed citizen stories. And you know, again, anything else that breaks over the holiday weekend, we'll keep you covered there. So we will talk to you again on Monday, but I hope that you do have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. And I am so thankful and grateful for your support. That's it. I got nothing else. So we'll let you go. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.